Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
He got him in the white trunks. He hurt him.
Beautiful. Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the count.
Wow.
And here comes the submission. And it's all over. It's nice. All over. First round knockout.
Big
he's out. Rich
one
Franklin
punch
retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the MMA Report podcast right here on Radio Influence. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, about to be joined by my co-host Daniel Galvan as we are going to take a look back at what happened last Saturday night at Bellator 198. Plus, we'll start to look ahead to the month of May, some of the fights that we are interested in the UFC and Bellator. Also going to have three interviews for you here on the podcast. Going to be joined by Ricky Simon, of course, coming off that win in his UFC debut. Talk to him about that matchup and the fact of wanting to fight Benito Lopez next. Also, we'll talk to two fighters going to be in title fights at next week's Unified show. And that is Shane Campbell, the current lightweight champ. Of course, you may remember Shane from his time in the UFC. And also, we'll talk to Teddy Ash, who is going to be fighting for the vacant light heavyweight title. Plus, we'll get into some news and notes and other various things going on in the world of mixed martial arts. But Daniel, man, how you doing?
Jason, I'm doing great because we're here to talk about Bellator 198. And while you were doing that intro, I decided to kind of shore up all my takes, and I actually watched the entire card during that 30 seconds.
Yeah, man, you talk about just a quick night of fights in terms of that main card. Of course, it was a fight card that did have a lot of filler content in it. I thought one of the things that was kind of very interesting about the fight card is the fact of they did a post-fight show on the Bellator app. I believe that's the first time they've done anything. You know, of course, we'll talk about the television ratings at some point, but we do want to talk about the fights, but before we kind of really get into, you know, the fights, what happened, and I wrote about this on Saturday in my preview piece, you know, there's, you know, Fedor, there is, you know, look, the Fedor of pride is not walking down that Bellator ramp. We all know that. But there still is something special about watching Fedor Emelianenko fight.
Yeah, it's a really weird point in his career. It's a point where you look at the different parts of Fedor. The one we all remember is the mystical creature that would walk down that cage expressionless, and he would take out anybody that was opposite him in the cage, or obviously for a grand majority of his career inside the ring. Now we're looking at a Fedor that isn't perfect, a guy who is looking to kind of get a win not only over his opponent but against Father Time, and it's a really interesting part of his career. He certainly still has that it factor. I think that's the thing I would point towards, that thing that is unexplainable when it comes to star power. Fedor has it. You can't really point towards, like, you know, Fedor is a big time star because, like, he's got great abs. He doesn't look like a star, but he certainly is. And it's a really crazy story that I never thought we would talk about Fedor in 2018, where it's almost like, kind of like, you know, it's like an action movie where it's the fifth or sixth sequel, and it's like the action hero is really old, but he's got to do this thing one more time. And that, to me, is what we're seeing out of Fedor. The question is he going to be able to do it? I think when you look at maybe the attention his fights are garnering in Bellator, as he continues to have more success, I think there's going to be a lot of momentum to watch him attempt to triumph in this tournament. And what we saw Bellator 198, well, we saw a whole lot in 48 seconds. We saw him get dropped a bit early on, immediately recover, and then he kind of was calm and won the wild barrage that Mir threw at him. He got the knockout. So moving forward in terms of what you can project out of Fedor, I think you know he has a decent submission game, or a really good submission game. But more than that, he has hell lot of power. And that may be just enough to put him in the finals.
you know, he did deal with a little adversity. You know, Frank did clip him there in 20 seconds, but recovers and goes out and gets the win. And I think for Bellator, it's the ideal result, if I can say that, as now you get Fedor and Chael Sonnen. But, you know, there's just, you know, in MMA currently, there's not many fighters that people will go out of their way towards. And even though the television ratings, I think, were not what probably a lot of people expected, I thought they would be higher than what they were, especially based on, you know, what I was seeing on Saturday night with social media traffic. But now Bellator's got a huge fight in Fedor and Chael Sonnen. You know, we'll see what happens with Frank Mir. I don't think Frank is done. I think he'll continue fighting, but we'll see what happens there. I initially mentioned that I thought, man, why not put Fedor and Chael in Portland, in Shell's backyard. Bellator has a lot of guys under contract that train in that area. But Scott Coker, after the fact, said, "Hey, we're taking this. The plan is to take this fight to the East Coast." And to me, it's one of three venues. It's either the Barclays Center, MSG, or Mohegan. The reason I put Mohegan third is I think that they probably want to go to a little bit of a bigger building than what Mohegan is. I believe Bellator, the max is probably going to be about 9,500, maybe 10,000 they can put in the Mohegan Sun. But if you go to Barclays or MSG, you know, you're talking, you know, 5,000 plus more people in there. And you got to imagine, kind of like what with UFC did with Khabib Nurmagomedov, with wanting him to have him in that New York market with the Russian community there. That to me seems like a logical thing. And, you know, we got a question about, and this came from at Parcells 123 and says, does Bellator have a fight that can break a million viewers right now? And you have to look at Fedor and Chael, because you know Chael Sonnen is going to talk so much crap about Fedor leading up to this fight. He might get so much interest that a lot of casual sports fans tune in.
Yeah, the one thing Chael is damn good at is talking a bunch of crap. But it seems like recently a lot of his trash talk has been kind of lost amongst the woods of mixed martial arts. And I think it's just because he hasn't had the right opponent to provide that type of platform where it really resonates. It could also be something where maybe people are tired of the way Chael promotes and they see through it. But I do have a sneaking suspicion that the pre-fight hype for Fedor versus Chael Sonnen will be a return to form when it comes to how effective his promo work is. So that's a nice question, and it's an interesting question, because I would have told you heading into Bellator 198 that really I would have assumed that there was a high potential possibility for Fedor versus Mir to get 1 million viewers. When you look at those TV ratings at 750K, I would say that's a slight disappointment. In that if you look at the numbers Bellator has been getting recently, you understand this has been a downward trend for this brand. So with that understanding, I thought the bar that they wanted to clear to just to be like, eh, that was okay, would be 800,000. But you were really shooting for a million viewers. And I really think when we get consistently these good Bellator events, you know, May is filled with two solid cards, I think there's going to be some momentum regarding the brand of Bellator. The ratings may slightly increase. And by the time we get to Chael versus Fedor, along with the pre-fight hype, and along with the fact that people are now accustomed to solid cards out of Bellator, I feel, as we talk now, that Bellator's fight card with Fedor versus Chael will get 1 million viewers combined with both the Paramount Network and the CMT. And in terms of the venues, I think the place to go would be Barclays Center.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably where likely they go. And Dale mentioning 750K, that is a combined live plus same day DVR, 581,000 on the Paramount Network, additional 169,000 viewers on CMT. You know, when I put those television ratings out there, you know, had a lot of people kind of awful rating, you know, disastrous. That's not the term I would use. I think it's probably, you know, I'm sure, you know, personally, I thought that they would get, you know, 650 to 700 on the Paramount Network, you know. And, you know, one of the things is going to be is in recording this podcast, we don't know the peak viewership of, you know, how many people, you know, tune in for Fedor and Mir. But, you know, if that peak is near a million viewers, that's really going to tell you just the fact of people just weren't watching, you know, the other fights on the main card, which all ended via submission. Three of those four ended in the first round. The other one ended in the second round. And one of the questions we kind of got about the undercard, and this came from at B. Abraham 1988, saying, should Bellator continue with these squash matches to build stars, or should they have more competitive matchups like they did with Chandler early in his career? Look, I saw a lot of people complaining, I think most notably about the Dylan Danis matchup, and I don't understand the criticism of that fight booking. At the end of the day, this was Dylan Danis' pro debut. Like, who did you want him to fight? A guy who's like 5-0?
Yeah, that would have been absurd. Look, everyone can't be Aaron Pico, and really nobody should. The way Aaron Pico was thrown to the wolves in his first fight is something that he kind of demanded, his camp demanded, and that should not be the norm. Because even though these fights are happening under the Bellator platform, you should absolutely give these guys the type of amateur fights, the type of debut fights they would have gotten on the regional MMA scene, just to get their feet wet in the cage. And Dylan Danis' next opponent shouldn't be 2-5, like Kyle Walker. But he definitely shouldn't be like a 6-0, 7-0 undefeated, you know, mid-level prospect. It should be a steady progression. And that's probably what Dylan Danis is going to get. And it's probably going to be an accelerated pace than most guys when they debut into the sport. Because immediately you watch this card, and Dylan Danis is the one fighter on the undercard that I think jumps out. And it's clear that he has real star potential with the people who he associates himself with in Conor McGregor, as well as his skill level on the ground. And lastly, his promo work. This guy is really great on the mic. He's really confident. And if his skills allow it, he is definitely going to be a big star in mixed martial arts. But the skills is a big point. It's so early in his career. And as much as he talks about his stand-up, that's going to be a question mark until he comes out and takes on a bona fide striker, holds his own, or gets the victory on the feet. So I thought that I really liked the formula of this card. It really rang true to kind of what we saw out of Scott Coker in Strikeforce. And that's not the best MMA. Obviously, the best MMA is just high-level matchups that are too close to call. But I think if you look at the formula for what's going to work for Bellator, it's going to be following that Strikeforce formula where you have these five-fight main cards, you have a solid main event, and then you have two fights that are really close fights. Top contenders taking on one another, and you look at the other two slots on your main card to fill in showcase fights where you're clearly having an A-side and a B-side, and you're building Neiman Gracie or Dylan Danis. Just because looking at Bellator's roster, I think that's a surefire way to build your own stars. And also, when you watch the product, I thought it was a really enjoyable and easy watch, Bellator 198 was. So that is, to me, the upside. It's not the greatest form of MMA, but looking back at some of the outings we've had out of Bellator, my general thought watching this card was I liked what we got here. And that is, of course, to keep in mind that Rafael Lovato was supposed to take on John Salters.
Exactly. I mean, that was essentially a number one contender fight. Unfortunately, you know, Salter unable to make it to fight night due to injury. I mean, for Dylan Danis, I mean, look, you see the clear things he has to improve on the striking. You look at his head's on the center line. He's got to be able to get some head movement in there. But you go to the ground with him, I you're screwed. I mean, I guess that's about the nicest way to say it. I mean, you know, Jake Smith, who recently won his Bellator debut, he's been on social media saying that he wants this. I think there's no way Bellator books that fight. You know, Jake is, I want to say, 7-2 in his career. I just can't see Bellator booking that matchup. I mean, to me, it's – and also, why is everyone all of a sudden calling out Ben Askren?
And I don't understand it either. I think it's one of those things where with absence, the heart grows fonder, right? Ben Askren's out here saying, I'm hanging up my – MMA gloves, and now everyone wants a piece of them, which I'm glad for, man. I really want everybody to call out Ben Askren because I want to see him get challenged, man. I want to see what Ben Askren does against the top welterweights in the world. That's not Dylan Danis, but I hope everyone keeps on calling him out because look, I'm not really too concerned about maybe what Cole Conrad would have done in the long run in the great scheme of heavyweights. You know, I'm glad he's out there doing stuff on the dairy farm. But Ben Askren at welterweight, I really want the conclusion to the story because that's an elite level wrestler. But moving back to Dylan Danis, I don't think the matchup is Jake Smith either. I think it's a happy medium in between what Jake Smith has and Kyle Walker's resume. Just put this guy, just churn this guy out. Put this guy on main cards because he is really nice depth to your main card. Dylan Danis is in a nice spot where he's a guy you could put on as your fourth or fifth most interesting fight. And that really makes your main card pop out. Both him and Aaron Pico, I think, are very much in similar roles when you are the Bellator matchmaker and you're looking to put on these events. So I just thought this was an A plus out of him. I mean, he just went to work and got that toehold and got the win. It was just, I don't really know how you can criticize a guy for winning in 98 seconds, but I don't mind Michael Chandler doing it because, you know, he's just a random fighter calling him like the most unathletic fighter he's ever seen, which that's harsh. Have you seen heavyweights? But Dylan Danis, you know, solid performance. And if you're Bellator, you just got to look at how you can lock this guy up because it's clear that this guy's best days ahead of him are fights 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. This could be a situation if you're Bellator, you don't want to be the one where Danis kind of has his first six fights and he's out into the UFC, which I have a deep feeling that's probably what's going to happen if he's undefeated.
Yeah, in terms of Ben Askren, the only fight in Bellator I'd want to see Ben Askren is Rory McDonald. I mean, there's no other matchups at 170 in Bellator that interests me with Ben Askren. I truly do believe, I think if we ever see Ben fight again, I think it's in the UFC, which I think probably is doubtful for Dylan Danis. You know, give him a guy, maybe has two, three, four professional fights under his belt. Let him continue to grow because they might have, you know, someone that, you know, I mean, look, you know, Dylan Danis, because of what he says, you know, 50% of the people probably are rooting for him, and 50% of the people are probably going to root against him. So, you know, he's someone I think Bellator should try to build up. You know, Neiman Gracie gets a submission win. You know, he mentioned in the pre-fight press conference that he had a name that he was going to call out. Of course, John McCarthy doesn't ask the question in the post-fight interview, but you know, he gets asked about it in the post-fight scrum deal with the media, and he really doesn't call anybody out, but basically talked about, you know, fighting, you know, fighters who have had fathers who've competed in this, which, by the way, we're going to talk about an odd matchmaking later on the podcast. How about this odd Bellator matchmaking? Ryan Couture versus Syed Awad. I feel really bad for Ryan Couture.
Yeah, that is weird because I thought Couture is a fighter you kind of want to protect. But looking at Couture's game, it's just not a nice day in the park against a fighter that possesses the type of firework Syed Awad is. You know, a matchup against Neiman Gracie, that would be nice for him. I mean, other than the fact that he's probably going to get tapped out. But looking at Neiman in this fight, he was kind of the polar opposite of Syed Awad in that you don't fear too much of his stand-up. It's not the greatest thing in the world. But he was just at home on the ground, which is the least surprising fact you will ever hear. I mean, Jason, if I get knocked over the head with a shovel, I wake up in 30 years and you tell me we got to do a podcast or we got to preview a fight card and I see a guy named Gracie is on it, I have a general idea of what his skill set is going to be. And that's what happened to Neiman Gracie. This was just a steady win over Javier Torres. It probably took a little longer than maybe he would have wanted to, but he's able to sink in that arm triangle choke. And again, I don't know the ceiling for Neiman Gracie. I would probably say it's a little lower than Dylan Danis, but I think Gracie is a fighter where if you protect him and you make the right matchups, you could generally put on a real solid main card fight. But yes, I feel so bad for Ryan Couture. That is not going to end well.
No, and that's at 170 pounds. We briefly mentioned Lovato Jr. gets a win over Gerald Harris. I would expect that if Salter's not going to be out for a long time, that we see Lovato and Salter get rebooked. If not, Lovato's got to be right there looking for the winner of Carvalho and Musasi at Bellator 200. Manuel Sanchez, a nice win by him. Almost, I thought he was going to get the standing arm triangle choke, which I believe would have been the second standing arm triangle choke in Bellator history. But, you know, he cements his place as number one contender. I don't think there's, I guess if you're Manuel Sanchez, you're just hoping that, you know, Pitbull and Vichel isn't some super close fight and they want to book the immediate Shoji matchup, but Sanchez clearly, you know, right after Daniel Vichel, the number one contender there at 145 pounds.
Totally agree, Jason. You mentioned those two fights. These were the two fights that were supposed to be the competitive ones. Obviously, John Salter's out, and I think that's easy matchmaking to plug them right back against one another because those are two of the top middleweights that aren't, you know, champion, essentially. You know, Gerald Harris is a tough customer. And Lovato Jr. just went to work and completely schooled him to get a win. This was, to me, the best performance we've seen out of Lovato, either that or the win over Mike Rhodes. I mean, this was just easy domination out of Rafael Lovato Jr. And he really stuck out as, I want to see this guy take on someone like John Salter. I really want to see what he can do. And then the fight that was supposed to be that close back and forth, unanimous split decision type contest was the co-main event, Sanchez and Cecilia. But after going a very long time in Bellator, not getting a finish since his debut, I mean, decision after decision after decision, you know, it's like Emmanuel Sanchez has channeled his inner Brad Tavares. And all of a sudden, this dude is a finishing machine, back-to-back submission wins. And he did it against Sam Cecilia. Kind of weird game plan out of Sam Cecilia because I figured this guy would have gone out and played Rock'em Sock'em Robots, would have won, made this a striking contest, but he kind of took it to Sanchez from a grappling standpoint, and that ended up being a pretty big mistake as eventually Sanchez hung on, Cecilia got up, and Sanchez got the submission and got the victory. So Emmanuel Sanchez is looking better than he has in his career. There's a real chance that if he challenges for this featherweight title, no matter who the champion is, he could walk out as the champion. So, again, you look at those four fights on the undercard, there's not a whole lot you can do when it comes to criticizing the four victors. I thought the positive for Bellator is you had four awesome finishes out of four fighters moving in an upward trajectory.
Yeah, you know, and overall it was a, you know, very easy fight card to watch, especially when you have five finishes. But that is Bellator 198. Of course, we'll talk a little bit about Bellator 199 later on in the podcast. You mentioned Brad Tavares, and we'll just mention here. It gets announced this week. He's going to headline the Ultimate Fighter finale card on July 6th there at the Palms in Las Vegas. And, you know, and Brad Tavares, for a guy who's been in the UFC as long as he has, finally gets in a main event spot. But this matchup against Israel Adesanya, I don't understand it, why it makes sense for Brad Tavares outside. And we were talking before we started recording the podcast. The only reason it would make sense for him, it's a main event spot. But from a rankings aspect, this fight makes zero sense for Brad.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's won four in a row, and he's got a big finish over Jotko. You're talking about a guy in Adesanya who only has two UFC fights, and in his last performance, it's almost like his stock may have stayed the same or lowered a little bit against Marvin Vettori. That was not a great outing for Adesanya. If you take this fight, I guess it just has to be the simple fact that finally you can say you main evented a show. But this was the type of fight booking where it makes you wish there was, like, every time a fight was made, the fight makers are open to a press conference. So you can just ask them, why? Was everyone else hurt? Because this isn't a fight that pops out at all, other than you're doing that Joe Silva genius math where you just see what's going to happen and you know Adesanya's going to come out, look like a superstar in a stand-up contest against Tavares and get the win. But this is a very weak main event. And for Brad Tavares, I mean, this is a whole lot to lose and not a whole lot to gain other than to say I have five consecutive wins. But at least he's in the main event, so that should be a decent little payday. But yeah, this will likely be a UFC broadcast that will probably be one of the lower rated ones in the summer, probably the least significant fight card they do all summer.
Yeah, I want to say what's it, night before there's a PFL card that week, and of course that's International Fight Week, so there will be a lot of attention on Las Vegas that week. But when I saw that matchup earlier this week, you know, and you know, I saw a lot of people kind of talk about, man, like, wow, they're really giving Insania a big step up in competition, which you kind of, you know, after the way the last fight went, you didn't think that. You thought that, you know, maybe there'd be a little bit of a step up, but man, they're throwing him right into the fire. But for Brad, I mean, outside of, and you brought up a great point before we started doing the show of, you know, maybe it's just because it's a main event spot, but yeah, just a very, very odd matchup there. But we are going to get into what's coming up in MMA here in the month of May here in a little bit. But right now, going to let you hear the interview portion of this week's podcast. First up, you're going to hear my conversation with Ricky Simon, of course, coming off that, I guess, controversial win there back at the UFC Fight Night card in Atlantic City. Had a chance to talk to him. Just kind of about everything that went about that. We didn't talk too much about the controversy because I feel like that's a story that's just been kind of beaten down, but did have a good conversation with Ricky. Also, then you're going to hear my conversation with Unified Lightweight Champion Shane Campbell, who's going to be defending his title next Friday night. Unified 33. And also, you're going to hear my conversation with Teddy Ash, who's also going to be that Unified fight card, as he's going to be fighting for the vacant light heavyweight title. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who won his UFC debut. And, of course, now it looks like maybe it's going to be Benito Lopez. It is Ricky Simon. Now, Ricky, of course, we've talked for a long time. I did notice something that you changed your Twitter handle. Now, Ricky Simon UFC, no longer Ricky Simon 135.
Got to let the people know. Ricky Simon UFC now.
I know... there's been, you know, so much talk about, you know, what happened in your fight, but I'm wondering the first and second round, how do you assess your performance in those rounds?
You know, there was a lot of stuff we had to deal with going into the fight that we kind of game plan for. And, you know, considering, you know, I had, you know, you go into a fight, it's hard to go into a fight 100%. So, for my first fight in the UFC, I do feel like I wanted to, you know, prove myself a little bit better than I did. And obviously, you know, you always want to look better than and perform better than you did. And I'm always my toughest critic. But yeah, the first round was rough. If you watch the fight, I got clipped a couple times. But I think I started coming back stronger in the second. One judge even gave me the second round. And the third round was all mine.
True story or not, the one-arm guillotine taught to you by Dave Jansen.
Dave Jansen, my man. Yeah, that's true. Dave's a wizard with his chokes in general, and I kept seeing him hit that one in practice, and I asked him about it after practice, so he pulled me aside, and we worked on that, and that's actually one of my most successful guillotine chokes. I'll abandon the lock just to go to the one-arm post and finish it that way. So yeah, yep, that's true. Dave Jansen taught me that one.
And mentioning about, you know, you did an article with MMA Junkie where you mentioned Benito Lopez was a guy that you were interested in fighting. And I found it interesting that you tweeted at Benito, you know, had mentioned about your call out. You said, "Tune in August 3rd to watch Little B pull out once again." So is there more of this story?
If you guys look back up on my Instagram or Facebook or any of that, you'll see that we were scheduled to fight quite a few times, and Little B found a way to weasel out of each one of them fights. So you know, he was smart to do so before him, and he was undefeated. You know, he was probably close to getting into the UFC, as was I, and so he was probably just being strategic. He knew he would lose that fight, so that wouldn't look good. Take longer for him to get signed. So. But now we're both here. You know, he got signed off the Contender Series off a split decision win. I didn't get signed off the Contender Series, so I just it just added to it. Still, I'm just salty. He owes me that fight. I like that fight, and it's going to be exciting. We're both two young prospects, and I already got one fight of the night bonus. Let's get another one.
Why do you like that fight so much?
I like that fight just because, you know, first of all, I do great against his style. You know, I'd be able to determine, you know, where the fight goes. I'd beat him on the feet. I'd take him down and big brother him on the ground too. But also just because I don't know why he's been running. He pulled out of fights. He said no to fights, but he'll, One fight, yeah, he said no to, and then he said yes to fight my teammate. So he fought my teammate instead. I went and cornered my teammate just to show him, hey, you keep running, I'm going to be here though. So we're at the highest level. We're getting paid what we should be getting paid. Let's put on a fun show. Let's do it. Let's finally make this fight happen.
You know, it's been a couple weeks since this fight. So since your UFC debut, are you already back inside the training room, or are you kind of letting your body heal up a little bit more just because you had two fights so close together?
Well, yeah. So I had six fights in I think a matter of 13 months, which is pretty active. I had two 5-round training camps and I had for the Chico Camus fight in December, then right back to training, fought Zani in March, and then this fight just 4 weeks after. So the body's definitely been feeling it. I started doing physical therapy today on my back. Just had some ongoing back issues. Getting that taken care of, but I've been in the gym already, kind of like just watching and kind of hanging out, but I haven't got to do anything myself. So I definitely got to treat the body. I'm in it for the long haul. So I got to treat my body nice. And I'm already itching to get back after it. Like even after being so busy this last year, it's just what I love to do, and I want to get back to training and I want to get back in there.
Short notice opportunities are something that happen all the time in the UFC. Would there be any adjustments that you would make if another short notice fight came up based on, the preparations you put into your UFC debut?
No, I think I did. I mean, I think I did everything great considering like what we had to work with, right? Four weeks isn't a long time to heal up from a fight in a training camp, let alone heal up and then train and peak for another fight. So, I did it right. I think I basically took a week off from, dieting and letting my body just kind of like heal and eat good food. And I was doing lighter workouts, nothing light. And then I flew back to Hawaii for my few sparring sessions I could do. And then back home for the last bit of training camp to get with Fabiano, and then back out to the fight. So I sacrificed a lot in those 4 weeks. I did everything I could to be prepared, and I wouldn't have changed anything.
The show I did after your fight, the thing that I mentioned, and I saw this on social media, so I can't take full credit for this, where it said, due to all the controversy, no one is giving Ricky the credit he deserves for what you were able to pull out there at the end of the fight. Do you feel that, like, that people just aren't giving you the credit you believe you deserve?
Yes, I definitely feel that way. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. It was kind of like in that dude's hometown, I guess. Not really because where he's from, but that's where he's been training the last, 5 years, where he's from. It was where his team's from. So people in that area definitely wasn't giving me the credit, but I really don't care. I know what I've done. I know what I've had to do to get to this point, and I have a great support system over here in the West Coast anyway, so that's all right.
Anyone who follows you on social media, they'll see you tweeting out the support for all your Pacific Northwest fighters there. Seeing your Jake Smith might be getting a little bit of a big fight here with Dylan Danis.
Who's that? Jake Smith?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Uber Smitty.
No, I'm just kidding.
I will say this. When I saw that tweet, I go, there's no way Bellator's booking that fight.
If they want to bring up Danis, there's no way they book that fight. But
exactly, it makes from the Danis camp, I'm like, probably not the smartest way to go. But hey, if he wants to take that fight, I mean, that probably says a lot about Dylan Danis.
Yeah, we'll find out. But if he takes that fight, he's going to sleep. Jay got some heavy hands. Even no matter, I think I would probably be at 170. It doesn't matter. Jake hits hard at any weight class, and that'd be awesome. That'd be great for Jake to get that notoriety and get to put someone to sleep who deserves it.
Hell, I mentioned why not do Fedor and Shell in Portland?
I saw that tweet. I was like, heck yeah, I mean, they could definitely do something with that. They have a lot of Bellator fighters just out of our gym. They could really do something with that. So, yeah, they should.
So if August 4th ultimately comes together, when does training camp? When would training camp start for you?
Well, if I scheduled it right, probably towards the end of June. If I'm going to beat Benito Lopez up August 4th, so that hopefully I can get healthy by then and get right back into it. I would like to fight at least two more times this year, so that would put me right in the timeline with that. By August, you know, fight November, December, and call it a successful 2018.
And obviously, it'd be a very great year for you. Ricky, man, as always, I appreciate the time. And of course, let everyone know about that new social media handle and where they can follow you.
Yeah, follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Ricky Simone UFC. And I have a fan page on Facebook, just Ricky Simone.
And I will say, follow Ricky on Instagram. He's a good follow on Instagram.
Yeah, follow me. I was going to tell you, I was a little disappointed. I thought I was going to get way more food pics from your Instagram from what you talked it up. So I gave you the follow, and then I didn't see as many food. I mean, there's some good ones.
I haven't been going out to eat as much recently.
Okay, well, that's what I was there for. I was there for the
look,
food.
Look, once football season starts, and you see me in a different town every weekend.
All right. I'll be looking for it.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be defending the Unified Lightweight title come Friday night, May the 11th. Unified 33 is Shane Campbell. How's he doing, Shane?
Great.
I appreciate the time, man. Of course, this fight was supposed to take place back in December. That anyone who follows MMA, they know exactly what's going on there with Edmonton. But for you as a fighter, what was just that time period like when obviously there was so much uncertainty about MMA in Edmonton?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty shitty. That's never really happened in my case before, and I've had quite a bit of fights, and I never really seen it, but... Yeah, the scenario has kind of ironed itself out a little bit right now. At least we got the fights going again. And, I mean, at that time, it was really, really quite a blow, especially the whole event getting shut down just a couple days before the actual event was supposed to take place. So hard on a lot of people.
And, of course, prior to that, you beat Tristan Connolly, and you're now training partners with Tristan, which I found very interesting. What's it like for you? You're working with a guy that you fought before. I mean, how much do you try to pick his brain and try to see, like, maybe how he was strategizing against you?
No, we don't really talk about that much or anything, but he's a really fun guy to train with. He's a martial artist that just loves to get in there and spar and train, and so do I. So, you know, our personalities just kind of hit it off pretty well together, and there's not too many of higher level training partners around, so it'd be crazy not to train together.
Where did your love for MMA come from? Was it just something like once you stepped into the gym the first time you realized you love martial arts?
No, when I started, training, well, like a long time ago, when I was 16, just turning 17, I started training with Crew of Lynn. And, before that, I rode BMX bike, just kind of a shitty one as a young guy, and did half pipe and kind of toured around and, you know, went on adventures on my own. And then when I found kickboxing, Crew of Lynn kind of showed me the path of the sport, really, in kickboxing, and showed me that the love of that art for, and with that comes the love of martial arts as well. And then the martial arts MMA kind of grew, several years after my kickboxing kind of.
You know, mentioned about Tristan also, work with Bibiana Fernandez. I know you got to go over with him for his last fight over in Bangkok. Well, for you, I mean, obviously this is a sport where you have the opportunity to travel the world. But what was your big takeaways just by going over there and seeing how people over there view MMA?
Actually, that's a pretty interesting question because I guess the Thai audience, the fight took place in Bangkok, but the Thai audience, I didn't find took to MMA nearly the way they take to stand-up fighting by any means. The crowd was a little bit different and kind of, yeah, just not as into it as they would be on boxing fights at all, in my opinion anyway.
And of course, this is a rematch you have here, but the rematch, the first fight was so long ago. I mean, 2012. I mean, I think all of us can kind of realize how long ago that was. Do you even look back at the first fight because it was so long ago and both of you are just so different martial arts at this point?
Yeah, 100%. I don't really look back at too many fights anyway, but yeah, like you said, that's quite a bit of years ago, and either one of us could have, you know, grown and changed so much in that time, so I'm not really basing anything off of that fight.
In terms of not really looking back at your last fights, is it one of those things of like, hey, fight happens on Friday or Saturday, I watch it Monday, Tuesday, and I close the book and just move on?
No. In the first couple weeks, I'll watch it, you know, dozens of times and analyze it and pick it apart and, you know, count how many inches of this step I took and how many times I threw this, you know, combo, you know what I mean, my strike count. I analyze each fight quite a bit right after, but then, you know, a few weeks, a few months is where it kind of trails off. By that time, I've usually had a new fight, so got to start working on that one.
I know in another interview you've done leading up to this fight, you were just like, look, I don't know how this fight's going to go. Is that kind of your mentality every time you step into a fight of like, look, one little thing and this fight goes, you know, completely in a different direction?
Yeah, I mean, David Lee really hit it on the head when he says the sport's decided by millimeters and milliseconds. And, you know, I've made peace with that and I understand that. And I try to prepare as well as I can before the fight and make sure that I win it there. But yeah, I mean, anything can happen. Like the better man can sometimes, you know, who knows? A lot of things can happen.
You know, and obviously you've been on a great roll heading into this fight. You know, I know you've mentioned about, you know, that Calgary show would obviously be something you'd be very interested if that does take place. But is it just simply like, look, I'm not looking past this guy. You know, it would be great to have an opportunity in that car. But, you know, right now everything is about next Friday night.
Oh, 100%. This sport especially, you can't look past anything. Every training session is a potential injury waiting to happen. And, I mean, you know, any one of us fighters could be having the greatest role, and now one injury kind of sidelines us and will, you know, change the direction of our lives potentially. So it's an interesting industry to be in, and a lot of other people don't understand that aspect, that how you can have that uncertainty in your life. But, I mean, it's not only a fighter's, it's an athlete's career as well. It's an athlete's life. It's, you know, it's something that other people just don't really understand, I think.
Final thing, Shane, and I really appreciate time. I want to go back to 2010, October 15th, your first pro fight. What do you remember about that night?
Wow. Sorry, what fight is this? That might not be my first pro fight, I think. But.
That would be Lynn Constant.
So that was my first MMA fight, yeah.
Yeah.
I fought pro many, many years before that and with kickboxing. But yeah, my first MMA fight, okay. Yeah, that was after I had blown my knee out in Infusion, a reality show in Thailand. I was on there and I fight Ponjan Suk, a high-level Thai boxer. I went to throw a jumping scissor teeth to the face, and when I landed on my one leg, I blew my knee out, and had moved to Edmonton, and this was the first, Constant was the first fight back from that knee injury, and yeah, there was actually a terrible ref, reffing that, who reffed a couple more of my fights, and he's the worst. I'm not even going to say his name, so I really dislike him. I think he's going to get someone injured seriously in a fight because he does such a terrible job. But anyway, Keith was fighting that. He was repping that fight, and I threw a hook that kind of grazed Constant, but didn't really do much damage. And when he went down, I stepped back to let the fight stand up, to let, you know, have him stand up. And then the ref just stopped it there. But then that same ref on other accounts is like, let some people take so much unnecessary damage. It's ridiculous. So the parallel, I mean, it's the spectrum there is, it's just too great. You know what I mean? And that's where I don't think he's a good ref, but yeah, that's that fight.
Yeah. Not speaking of any names, there's actually a ref here in Florida that's very like that. And countless fighters here in Florida don't want that referee working their fight, to a point of managers have gone to the commission and said, I just don't want that referee working my fight. And it's actually worked where, that referee just is not working much anymore. But, it's unfortunately every commission, every part of the world, there's that situation. It's just unfortunate. But you've got the fight here next Friday night, May the 11th, Unified 33, defending your lightweight title. Shane, I appreciate the time. And, of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Yeah, pretty easy. Shane Shaolin Campbell on most of my platforms, and Shaolin Style MMA on Twitter.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be fighting for the vacant light heavyweight title at Unify 33 on Friday night, May the 11th. It is Teddy Ash going to take on Kobe Ortiz. Teddy, I appreciate the time. How you been, man?
Man, life is good. Training hard, man. Just getting ready for the fight. Always in fight camp. So, I'm loving it.
I had a chance to talk to Shane Campbell, who's going to be on this fight card, and he was in a similar situation that you were in. You were supposed to fight back in December, obviously totally out of Unified's control with what happened with the Edmonton commission there in terms of MMA. But for you, like, what was that time like, you know, in terms of when that gets canceled and the uncertainty of combat sports in Edmonton? Like, what was, like, do you remember what you thought like that week of like, man, what's next?
Yeah, it was a pretty shitty feeling. You know, you just kind of feel lost. You put in all this time and effort and work, and then, it ends up being for nothing. Kind of sucked for me, actually. At the time, I quit my job to train full time. And it was a title shot, which was huge for me. And there was a lot surrounding that fight. You know, it was a rematch with a guy I had beat, Jared McCollum, back in 2013. But I was excited to fight him again. And, you know, when fights don't fall through, it's always sucks. But whatever, it is what it is. It's the way it goes. It's the fight game.
It happens. You got to move on. And of course, since what happened December, you did get that win, back at the beginning of March against Cam Olsen. Of course, people may know Cam, fought on the Contender Series last year. And, you know, initially it was supposed to be you and Matt Hamill, and that ultimately does not come together. Is that just, bummed out? Would that be a way to describe when you get the phone call and know that fight's not happening?
Yeah, well, I kind of expected it a little bit, but at the same time, it sucked. I didn't let it get to me too much, so I just kept training. I knew that there was going to be a new guy, and at the end of the day, I'm still going to fight. It would have been a cool name to have on the resume and all that, but, you know, there's tougher fights, and that's kind of what I'd rather anyway, so...
And you get, of course, Unified finds you a new opponent here in Ortiz. He's been a little up and down in his past couple fights, but, as an opponent, what do you see in him?
He's definitely going to be a tough opponent. The guy comes to fight. He's got 16 wins under his belt. He's come from a Power MMA. That's a strong wrestling gym. You know, it's going to be a good fight all around. I'm just going to, put in the work that I have to, and he's not me, so.
He's primarily fought at 85, of course. This is 205. I guess that maybe outside looking in, people maybe say, hey, maybe he's going to have a speed advantage. What do you see as your advantages in this fight?
I definitely don't see him having a speed advantage, that's for sure. I've fought at 85, and I'm a small 205, to be honest. I'm not... You know, it's a very easy cut for me, and yeah, I'm comfortable. I feel good at 205, so that's kind of why I'm here. And I'm not scared of the big guys. You know, I don't mind hanging with some bigger boys at 205 if that's what I got to do. I feel good, and I have success at 205.
I mean, there's a relative of a big difference between 85 and 205, but have you ever thought about, you know, maybe, you know, long term that 85 be your home, or you're like, no, man, I feel much better at 205.
Well, I did the 85 thing for a while, and you know, I'm back more than, you know, to be honest, I could make 85 in a few weeks if I really wanted to, but that's just the thing right there. I don't really want to, man. I get good and take care of my body, but I like to have the burger and fries from time to time too. You know what I'm saying?
I mean,
I like to. You know, I feel good when I'm training for a fight at 205. When I fight at 85, you know, you're always watching your weight and what you eat. And, you know, I get it, but, you know, I'm comfortable at 205. I feel good, and I'm still big enough to fight 205ers and fast enough. I hit as hard as a 205er, so this is probably going to be my home for a while.
Is the diet the hardest thing about being a fighter?
No, it's not the hardest thing. You know, I can do it if I have to, but, you know, why do it if you don't have to? there's a lot harder things, you know, training your ass off every day, waking up early for morning practices, training in the evenings, walk out of the gym, sore as bumps, bruises, you know. There's a lot of hard things about being a fighter, but the diet is, you know, I just don't need the extra if I don't have to, right?
Obviously, you've been on a nice little winning streak heading into this matchup. How would you say this fight, obviously being a title fight makes it different, but how would you say this fight's different than your past couple of fights?
Well, it's for a title, which is huge. The last fight was a title, but it's with a different promotion. You know, every new opponent is a new experience, right? So that, I don't know. Every fight's different, right? So,
you know, and a win here obviously put yourself in a great position. Where do you, you know, have you even started to think about, you know, what's next, or is the mindset simply like, look, I you know, all my mind is on next Friday night, and I'll worry about the future after that.
Yeah, no, a lot of doors have been opening. You know, I'm starting to knock out bigger names, and people are really starting to see what I'm all about. So, and I'm only getting better, man. Every day, I'm working my ass off, getting better. So, you know, I keep wowing people and keep the crowd cheering, and you know, only bigger doors are going to open, and you know, we'll see what's next for sure. It's only up from here, right? I get a nice knockout on this guy, or anything, a submission, or just a crazy fight. Get everyone going, I'm wound up, man. That's what people want to see, and that's what gets you noticed, and that's what I've been doing.
You know, and looking at your record, you know, the submission win back in 2013, are you at all searching for a second submission?
It's going to happen someday, man. It's bound to happen. I love working on my shit. It's fun. And I sub a lot of guys in the gym, and it's a good time. Sub and be sub. So I'm not out there trying to be a sub guy, but you know, if the fight's on the ground and I get my opportunity, I'm not going to look away from it. Right.
Do you prefer training jiu-jitsu in the gi or no gi?
I haven't done much no or much gi recently, but I plan on, after this fight, getting back in the gi a bit. I'm more of a no-gi guy, MMA style. You know, I didn't really have, I'm just always in fight camp, and that's it, man. I just been training full-time to fight, right? So sometimes it's nice to have a little time off to jump on the learning curve, you know, and focus on other things like gi, jiu-jitsu, and stuff, right?
Exactly. And of course, this fight is going to be on Friday night, May the 11th, Unified 33. Teddy, I really do appreciate time. Where can everybody follow you out on social media?
I got Instagram, Teddy_Bear_Ash, and my Facebook page, Teddy Bear Ash.
And there was my conversations with Ricky Simone, Shane Campbell, and Teddy Ash. I mean, how about Ricky Simone kind of giving me some trash for not putting enough food pics up on my Instagram?
He's the only one. He is the only one that looks at your social media and thinks Jason doesn't post enough food pics. I mean, I hate your social media, Jason. Listen, I love buffalo wings, and I can live my whole life eating buffalo wings, but where I live in Harlingen, Texas, I don't go too many places. I have a general diet of Chick-fil-A, Buffalo Wild Wings, and Chipotle every once in a while. So I see you on your social media bragging about all your fine cuisine in Florida and all the great places you go when you travel on the NFL schedule. I absolutely despise you because I am damn right jealous. But I'm glad somebody likes your content.
Yeah, of course, primarily you go to my Instagram feed at Jason_Floyd. You'll see where I might be out and about eating food. Sunday, me and my wife went to the Jeff Dunham show, the first time I've ever seen him live, and then went to this new place called Cheese Please, which is a wine bar, and it's told about, they have really good grilled cheese. So I had a grilled cheese, very good grilled cheese. I will say this. I mean, different types of cheese they put in it. So it was really good. Yeah. So, that was fun. Of course, I'm sure, I know with me doing, restaurant marketing, I'll be out and about on Saturday for Cinco de Mayo. Any big Cinco de Mayo plans for you?
Nah, man, here where I live right above Mexico, Cinco de Mayo is one of those days where we look at white people and say, what's your problem, bro? Why are you appropriating our culture? Nah, we get drunk. We drink margaritas. We do all kinds of stuff. And, man, Cinco de Mayo, it's going to be real weird because if you're a combat sports fan, especially a Mexican like me, you're looking for that big-time boxing fight. And – what is it? I mean, did they book something now that Canelo's not happening? Or I'm sure there's a boxing fan listening to this that is screaming like, oh, this fight. But it's kind of weird that we don't have a Canelo fight on Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, I mean, you remember it was supposed to be GGG and Canelo. Of course, we all know that's no longer happening. But GGG does have a fight coming up.
Mark Tarosian. So I'm going to pretend I know who he is in about a week.
Yeah, well, that is on Saturday. But, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily going to get a lot of people out and about. As someone who, once I got out of college, I was in radio marketing. And now what I do in restaurant marketing, Cinco de Mayo, I refer to it a lot like St. Patrick's Day. It's amateur night. You get a lot of people who come out who normally don't come out and they get sloppy drunk.
Meanwhile, all those alcoholics are out here just judging you. But it's true. It's one of those days you go out and it's – look, man, we love our social media. It's all about posting stuff to sort social media. And it's like if you don't have a Cinco de Mayo social media post, did you even live? I do wonder which MMA fighter out there is going to have the greatest Cinco de Mayo. It'll be interesting to see how various people celebrate. But it's just another day in the park for someone like me, but I'll probably celebrate with some wings and some beer. So just a usual Saturday.
But you just know on Cinco de Mayo, if you want to go to like your local Mexican place and they have really good tacos, you just know that you better get like reservations because you're probably not going to be able to get in there.
Yeah, Cinco de Mayo is a great day if you wanted to try out that Chinese place that's always packed because it is Mexican food city. But you can never go wrong with Mexican food and, yeah, man. What do you have any big plans?
It's my wife's birthday, so it's whatever she wants to do. I'm taking her on. By the way, speaking of Instagram, on Friday you'll probably see I'll be out at the Taste of Clearwater Beach on Friday, so I'll probably be putting a ton of food pics up there. So Daniel, you'll probably be hating me at that point, but yeah, no, it's a nice relaxing weekend. No MMA that's going on, but next weekend we do have a Bellator and UFC show both on Saturday, UFC 224.
down in Rio de Janeiro. And then, of course, Bellator 199 in San Jose. And, you know, you look at both these fight cards. Obviously, one's a premium product with, you know, the UFC card, you know, that five-fight pay-per-view. By the way, the prelims on FX next Saturday night. Then, of course, you have Bellator on the Paramount Network. And I have to imagine when you look at the UFC pay-per-view, and this is a point of show where we're going to talk about the matchups that we are very excited for over the month of May. We're going to go through all the UFC and Bellator events. You know, first off, starting at UFC 24, I think the fight that sticks out to everyone is Jacare Souza and Calvin Gastelum.
Absolutely, man. This is a fight with two bona fide monsters, I mean, at middleweight. And it's a very important fight in that clear cut, whoever wins this gets the title shot in the middleweight division. If you're Kelvin Gastelum and you go out there and you do beat Jacare Souza, I mean, looking at what he did with the win over Bisping, I think there's a real, real case he deserves a title shot. But even if neither guy does get it, this is absolutely, to me, looking at everything in May, the most important fight in the UFC, other than the championship contest between Nunes and Pennington, just because you gotta just say, like, championship fights are the most important. But this one, it probably means the most among contenders. And it's one where I go back and forth on, and it's a major, major, major fight for the UFC. And really looking at that entire UFC 224 card, I think the story of this card is this is a really strong main card for UFC 224. There isn't a whole lot in the prelims that really jumps out to me of I have to watch it. But each fight on UFC 224 really serves a purpose, and I'm really looking forward to every fight, even though it is a fight card with a bit of a weak main event, given the betting odds for the Nunes-Pennington contest. And it's been a while since Pennington has been, you know, on the forefront of our minds, just given due to her layoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of those title fights that, you know, a lot of people aren't necessarily going to be interested in. I'll give you a fight on the prelims that I'm interested in, and it probably has more to do with you know, one side of the fight, and that to me would be actually the featured prelim FX. Carl Roberson against Cesar Fajeda. Of course, Carl came through, you know, the Dana White's Contender Series, got the win, first round submission win in his official UFC debut. That's one that sticks out to me. You know, Belfort Machida, doesn't really excite me. You know, John Lineker, Brian Kelleher should be a hell of a fight. You know, I do wonder with Mackenzie Dern, such a quick turnaround against Amanda Cooper, are they kind of rushing Mackenzie Dern a little bit here? But to me, no question with that fight card, you know, Souza Gastelum is what is drawing me to fork over to $65.
Yeah, and I absolutely, they should absolutely be, when you look at that poster, it makes all the sense to the world of how they lay that out. Because to me, the three money fights are the main event, the co-main event, and Belfort Machida for your casual fan. I mean, those are two names in Belfort and Machida that just about every casual mixed martial arts fan should know. They've played such a primary role in the UFC's light heavyweight and middleweight divisions. And I thought it was a great fight booking for where both these guys are in their career. You either use them to build up the next up-and-coming middleweight, or you put them against fellow legends. And I just am looking forward to Machida Belfort. It doesn't mean a whole lot in the long run, but it's going to be a pleasure to see both of them in the cage. And again, I think every fight serves a purpose. You have your championship fight, weak it may be. You have your barn burner in John Lineker taking on anyone, but Brian Kelleher is definitely going to bring the fight. But you could have subbed in anyone against John Lineker, and I still would have been looking forward to that fight. And Amanda Cooper is a real tough test for Mackenzie Dern, and it shows when you look at the betting odds, where Amanda Cooper is a plus 200 underdog, which that's not something I would have expected out of the second opponent you get from Mackenzie Dern. I thought they were going to really build her up against weak and weak opponents, but Amanda Cooper's not that. I think there's a major upset potential with Amanda Cooper against Mackenzie Dern.
I will say this. I think that next week's pay-per-view could have a little more steam on it if RDA Covington's on that fight card as opposed to 225. But I understand if you're the UFC. I don't think putting Colby Covington in Brazil is a smart idea.
Yeah. Wait a second. Wasn't Covington supposed to fight in Brazil?
Yeah, initially, it was never officially announced by the UFC, but it was rumored that that fight was going to take place on 224 as opposed to 225. But because I feel like Covington, everyone knows, the way Colby Covington is now promoting himself, he would have got a lot of people interested, and he probably would have talked crap about everyone else on the card.
Yeah, you're not wrong. And dude, I'm looking at this UFC 225 card. That must have been their original idea, because we're talking about June now, but that UFC 225 card is kind of insane. It's like,
oh God, take my money, UFC, take my money.
Yeah, man. Like, I feel like CM Punk has to be on that main card, right?
Oh, I no question. I mean, I think he's probably the opening matchup on pay-per-view, maybe the second fight on pay-per-view. And look, I come from one of the bars that I do marketing for. We purchase UFC pay-per-views. And, look, CM Punk being on a pay-per-view is a selling point, because that is a personality, a fighter in this sport that can draw people into a bar on a Saturday night. The rest of the main card is great, but CM Punk is that guy that can bring in that casual sports fan that maybe without CM Punk, maybe they're not watching on June the 9th.
Yeah, I don't know what the main card is officially, but you're going to get some mixture of like Joseph Benavidez, Sergio Pettis, Carla Esparza, Claudia Gadella, Andre Arlovsky, Evans, Lamas versus Bektik. Like, those are all fighters that are going to fight on TV.
Yeah, I think what your five-fight main card is going to be is obviously Whitaker Romero, the main event, Co-main, Dos Anjos, and Covington. And then your other three fights, Overeem, Blades, Arlovsky, Taivasa, and then CM Punk and Mike Jackson.
That's crazy to me. That's crazy they put Arlovsky, Taivasa on the main card over Holm and Anderson and Benavidez and Pettis.
I gotta think you put the heavyweight fight on there because you believe that it's gonna deliver in a knockout.
Yeah, you're not wrong. That's a key point there. But it could also deliver in a 15-minute slugfest. I mean, there is a real downside of that, but that's probably gonna be a first round KO. I just think that the issue is that Holly Holm really popped a nice buy rate with Cyborg Santos, and it's like you look at that buy rate. I don't understand why you wouldn't put her back on pay-per-view.
Here's the crazy thing. Is Rashad Evans on Fight Pass?
I mean, they really like doing that featured Fight Pass fight. And if you're looking at your resources, you really want to do a featured Fight Pass fight. He's the guy you go to, because you can absolutely feel good enough about Holm Anderson, Pettis Benavidez, and Lamas Bektik on TV to throw Evans on Fight Pass.
I think you got to put Guida and Green on the TV prelims, just because that's probably going to be pure insanity.
Yeah, and Evans Smith might not be. So you're totally right. The question is, is that going to be a three-fight Fight Pass prelim, you think? Because there's a lot of fights on here. I believe there's 13 fights on this card.
Yeah, I mean, you would have, four fights, right? Four fights on the prelims, on the Fight Pass prelims.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the moral of the story is, as good as all these fight cards are in May, I think the best fight card unquestionably is in June.
Yeah, no. Of course, on that night of UFC 224, we have Bellator 199, which will cap off the opening round of the heavyweight tournament. Bader and LaWall. Also, this fight card's got John Fish, Paul Daly, Chet Congo, Javi Ayala, Adam Piccolotti, Carrington Banks, Aaron Pico, Lee Morrison. We all know, Daniel, who your number one fight is. We all know.
Yeah, I mean, I got a bone to pick with Bellator. Okay, one, obviously the fight, and this should have been the main event, Congo and Javi Ayala. Like, you got someone like Javi Ayala and you don't put him on the main event, that's just you're asking for a low rating. That's all I got to say. But the fact, the audacity that Bellator announced or whatever, that the winner of Nelson Krokop is the number one alternate, completely bypassing what Javi Ayala is about to do, that pisses me off, Jason, because clearly Javi Ayala has to be the alternate here.
I did see one of our listeners did a tweet at you about that aspect.
Yeah. I don't know what we got to do, but I feel like we have to start some type of petition, because this is a grave injustice. But yeah, you know me, I'm always pumped to see Javi Ayala. I love this. I don't love this fight card, but I think it's nice. I really do. Aaron Pico, always excited to see him fight. And I think he's probably going to look freaking amazing again. You know, the weakest fight is obviously Adam Piccolotti and Carrington Banks. I mean, this is a chance for Piccolotti to kind of rebound after losing his momentum.
That's a nice lightweight prospect matchup.
Yeah, totally. And it's a good problem if that's the fifth most interesting fight. Because we go back a couple months, that would have been the second most interesting fight on a Bellator card. And that kind of shows the depth here. I mean, to be real here, Congo Ayala might be a really awful fight. Like, that could be ratings cancer. But who knows? John Fitch, Paul Daly could also be awful depending on who wins that fight. Ugh. But it will at least be intriguing to see how John Fitch fights. But yeah, that was a weird matchup when they announced it. It really felt like you weren't using your resources correctly in matching Paul Daly up against a wrestler like John Fitch. But it's interesting. And then Bader, King Mo. I mean, since the field was announced, Ryan Bader was my pick to win that heavyweight tournament. But this is very much just like a light heavyweight championship fight that isn't for the title.
Yeah, I mean, Bader Mo, I mean, look, if you're tuning in for the Bellator card instead of the UFC card, or maybe, you know, you go out to a bar and try to watch both of them, or maybe you do the two TV setup, you know, it is a reason to watch. I mean, Fitch Daly, I mean, if that becomes a wrestling matchup, that's not going to be a fun fight to watch, which, you know, it's one of those fights. Just go, why did you book this fight? I just, one of those just very, very weird matchups, Piccolotti Banks, two interesting prospects there. Something to mention about the heavyweights in Bellator, at DirtyBird212 asked if Bobby Lashley is done with Bellator. I really haven't heard it one way or the other, but I would expect that, you know, probably it's unlikely you ever see Bobby Lashley in Bellator. That's just my guess on this. I think, you know, obviously he's doing his WWE thing. Then the following week, the UFC is going to be down in Chile for UFC Fight Night. Of course, initially supposed to be Santiago Ponzinibbio against Kamaru Usman. Santiago out due to injury, and Damian Maia steps up to take on Kamaru Usman. We saw what Colby Covington did to Damian Maia, and like, I feel like this is going to be a thousand worse beating.
Yeah, I completely concur, but I'm still looking forward to the main event because Kamaru Usman has really evolved to just a really, really must-watch welterweight. And that's what I'm looking forward to, just to see the Kamaru Usman experience. When you look at this fight, Fight Night card, the one thing I'm looking forward to is honestly just seeing the atmosphere of this fight card. I'm looking forward to seeing the UFC go to Chile and Chile. I'm sorry if I mispronounced the country wrong, because I mean, like, it's five letters. You know, it shouldn't be too hard for me to nail it, and I feel like every syllable is important. So I'll go Chile. I messed it up. I'm just going to stop saying the name of the country. But whatever. It should be cool. The other fight that stick out to me, I think obviously the co-main event between Alexa Grasso and Tatiana Suarez is just a fight between two up-and-comers at women's strawweight. Well, I guess everyone in a division like strawweight is an up-and-comer. I think Brandon Moreno, Alexander Pantoja on the FS2 prelims is a fight that absolutely deserves to be on the FS1 prelims. But maybe that's something where they already had the FS1 lineup like locked in stone, and they couldn't put Moreno Pantoja on there when they got the fight.
And of course, you know, want to send prayers out to Wright Borg, who was initially supposed to be in this fight, but he did withdraw due to what's going on with his son, who's undergoing brain surgery. So, you know, thoughts and prayers go out to Ray and his family. Of course, that was supposed to be on this fight card, but as you hear Daniel mention, Pantoja steps in. The rest of this Chile fight card, man. Luque Lepreece, maybe, but outside of that, there's not much that sticks out to me.
Yeah. I think the one other fight that sticks out to me is the light heavyweight contest between Dom Reyes and Jared Cannonier, because I think that's open to the possibility of a real dominant first round victory, and that is exciting. But I think really you got five or six fights that you absolutely need to watch here. Otherwise, this isn't a fight night that jumps out at you, but it's going to be one that I'm looking forward to just to see how the crowd in Santiago reacts to the fighters.
And then 6 days after that fight card, we have the Bellator 200 there in London. Of course, Daniel mentioned a second ago, Mirko Krokop, Roy Nelson. I don't think it's been officially announced the main event, but pretty clear it's the main event. Carvalho, Musasi, Paige, Rickles, Davis, Vassell. And also you have Aaron Chalmers versus Ash Griffiths. In terms of this fight card, you do look at, to me, the co-main event, the middleweight title, Rafael Carvalho against Gegard Mousasi. Carvalho is kind of, a little bit of up and down in terms of, the excitement level. Big matchup for him. I mean, I think anytime, we talked a little bit earlier about Fedor, there's maybe three or four fighters in Bellator that you say that automatically, I think, get you in front of the television set. Fedor, Rory McDonald, and my number three would be Michael Page. I mean, it's unfortunate this fight card be tape delay, but look, David Rickles is going to come right at him. I mean, to me, that is going to be an action-packed fight. I don't know how long it lasts, but I think it's going to be very exciting.
I cannot wait for that fight. I've been waiting for these type of fights for Michael Page for, his entire Bellator run, and I think this is a nice little matchup. I think this is a fight card that, it is a really nice fight card. It's one in which there's a real hit or miss potential with the quality of the fights. You won't know until it happens. I think likely Davis Vassell will be a big time miss, but who knows? I could be totally wrong. Krokop Nelson will likely be a hit, but if it drags out, could be a miss. And the same goes set could happen here with the Mousasi and Carvalho if both these guys are super hesitant. But this is a major, despite the fact that he's the champion, step up for Carvalho, and this is really a lot is on the line when it comes to where he stands in the middleweights. If he is able to get a win over Mousasi, he becomes a bona fide top 10, top 5 middleweight. If not, this is Mousasi's first step in winning every single championship in Bellator. So I really think that the best fight here is Page and Rickles, just when it comes to fight quality. But there's going to be something oddly interesting when Mirko Krokop and Roy Nelson step in the Bellator cage. I'm not proud to say I'm excited, but I kind of am.
And looking at Tapology, they have it as a 18 fight card.
Are you going to watch every fight?
No.
Why is it an 18 fight card? Are they trying to sell out the S? Is it basically everyone's in charge? Or is this like basically half Bama, half Bellator?
Yeah, it's basically half Bama, half Bellator. But I mean, look, obviously, clearly, it's about getting, people in the building. When you look at those prelims, Toko is on it. Saul Rogers is on it. Anastasia Yankova is on it. Let's see if she makes 125 pounds, which obviously has been her issue in Bellator. But yeah, it's, plus, I think since it's a tape delay show, I don't even think they stream the prelims.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does. I figure they'll pick and choose which ones they put on the website afterwards. But there still isn't a whole lot on the prelims that I have to watch. I think watching Sal Rogers will be interesting. And then that Charlie Ward middleweight fight is also something to look at. But Aaron Chalmers, I mean, that's not a name that really sticks out to me other than the fact this is a guy 3-0 in Bama. I mean, are you excited to see him take on Ash Griffiths?
Well, isn't he he's a reality star guy.
So he's just a big reality star in England? Is that the whole deal?
Yeah, I forget what reality show he's – I think it's like the Jersey Shore – the UK's version of Jersey Shore. Maybe I'm wrong. But, he is a pro fighter. He has 3-0. I mean, that's the reason he's on the main card.
That makes sense, I guess.
But then, of course, 2 days after Bellator, we've got the Fight Night card over in Liverpool, headlined by Stephen Thompson and Darren Till. Neil Magny, as we're recording this podcast, we don't know who he's going to fight on this fight card, as Gunnar Nelson out of the event due to injury. Jorge Masvidal is apparently open to this matchup, but wants a catch weight of 180 pounds. Jason Knight, Makwan Amir Khani. That should be a hell of a fun fight, to watch there. But to me, on that Sunday afternoon here in the United States, you're tuning in for Thompson Till.
Yeah, I think this is probably this is absolutely the weakest UFC fight card, but Thompson Till is that one might actually top Jacare Castellum. Like, it's not as important in the welterweight division, but it's pretty close. And then the likelihood of this being a fight-of-the-year contender is what maybe puts it over the top here, because this is a damn firefight. I cannot wait for that. I cannot wait for Jason Knight, Amir Khani. Potentially, the discussion point is this is one of the best main cards we've seen out of a fight night, just from a fight quality standpoint, but it's going to be up to Arnold Allen and Mads Brunel and Manny Bermudez and Davey Grant and whoever Neil Magny takes on. If Masvidal steps up, that's another real big fight. Otherwise, though, there's not a whole lot on the prelims I'm super enthused about, other than I think Elias Theodoro versus Trevor Smith is a really nice featured fight on that fight pass.
Yeah, I mean, May Bermudez, a guy who came into the UFC, made an immediate impact earlier this year. So, May has got some definitely fights that you're really looking forward to watch. But I mean, you're already starting to kind of look ahead to June and July. Should note, in June, we get the start of the PFL. Don't know if you saw this, Danny, or not. Alex Nicholson, following his win over Rico Rodriguez at the Camso Legends event, he is now a part of season one of the PFL, stepping in there in the heavyweight, I guess we call it tournament, because that's, I guess, ultimately what it is. I hope PFL succeeds. I really do, but man, there's a lot of factors. You look at PFL and go, I don't know if that's going to succeed.
Yeah. It's something where everybody who's not the UFC that tries to make a foothold in the sport is more likely than not going to succeed. But every once in a while, there is a success story, and I wouldn't bank on the PFL being successful, but I will say I'm really excited about the tournament concept. I like the whole layout, and I just hope we get the entire thing played out, because there's a good possibility we don't, because, again, these things are always fragile. When you aren't the big dog, you don't have the bankroll that maybe the UFC does have. But I'm looking forward to this tournament, and I'm glad we were able to work in that Camp Soto Legends card here. I tried watching the fight card, but then I just got distracted by what else the website offers.
That's, I saw people tweeting about it, so it definitely got some out there. By the way, speaking of the PFL, the former World Series of Fighting, they're the last World Series of Fighting heavyweight champion, Blagoy Ivanov, has signed with the UFC. I had heard probably about a couple weeks ago that potentially he was going to be on the Contender Series, but he gets a big opportunity, takes on Junior Dos Santos in the main event of the UFC Fight Night card in Boise, Idaho. A huge opportunity for Blagoy Ivanov.
Yeah, and I'm glad he got signed here. I think putting him on the Contender Series would have been a minor mistake. I mean, I think he would have won no matter who his opponent is. But at 31 years old, he really has proven himself in multiple promotions, getting a lot of good wins in Bellator, and obviously winning the World Series of Fighting heavyweight title, defending it four times. And I mean, to me, Blagoy Ivanov is a guy who, it's crazy to talk about where he is now, just given the fact that, I mean, I believe he was stabbed very brutally, like in 2012. And his ability to rebound and continue to perform at a high level is kind of the story here. But at 31 years old, just entering the early prime as a heavyweight. So I think it's a nice signing by the UFC, and I'm looking forward to seeing him fight.
Also, it's out there report on Tuesday that the UFC and Nate Diaz are in serious talks for August return. So we'll see if that happens. Melvin Manhoff has re-signed with Bellator. Interesting note there. David Timor is stepping in to fight Nick Lentz at the UFC Fight Night card there in New York here on June the 1st. And Michael Chiesa versus Anthony Pettis rescheduled for UFC 226. Of course, we saw Michael Chiesa last week in the corner there of Sam Cecilia. So, while there's no MMA going on this weekend, Daniel, still a lot going on in the sport.
Absolutely. And it sets up for a big time week next week when we preview both the Bellator and the UFC pay-per-view. I honestly don't know how we're going to get it all in when it comes to watching these two things on May 12th, but I guess we'll figure it out somehow.
I'll either be at a bar, or I'll do probably the, I'll probably have the UFC pay-per-view on the television and then have Bellator on the iPad.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to be doing too, in the confines of my home and my underwear and some B-dubs. I will absolutely be eating some buffalo wings and watching both cards, kind of like that.
So what's the go-to sauce next Saturday night?
Man, I don't know. I'm feeling a little frisky here. I'm not someone with the greatest taste buds in the world, but I think I'm going to order some some hot wings from Buffalo Wild Wings. And just to cool it off, I'm going to order a big, big, big order of cheese curds. So it's going to be a rough night at the toilet Sunday morning, but it's going to be worth it Saturday night.
See, the Buffalo Wild Wings in my house, I don't think they have cheese curds.
Wow, that's a travesty. That would be good for me if the Buffalo Wild Wings by me didn't have cheese curds just from a health standpoint. But those are just one of the greatest appetizers. I mean, what's your go-to appetizer if you can't get cheese curds, Jason? Mini corn dogs?
No, God, I haven't been there in such a long time. I'm trying to think the last time I went there, what appetizer we got. It's been probably so long since I've been to Buffalo Wild Wings. It's probably been 6 months.
Yeah, I'm disappointed in you. Jesus, you're eating all your fancy restaurants. You don't take enough time for your mom and pop shops.
In South Tampa, there is better chicken wing options.
Yeah, no, I'll just pretend like you didn't say that.
So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, we'll be back next Wednesday, as Daniel mentioned. We'll get you ready for UFC 224 and Bellator 199. I am working on some Bellator interviews to have on the podcast next week, so look out for that. Do want to thank my guests, Ricky Simone, Shane Campbell, and Teddy Ash, all coming on this week's edition of the podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
To me, here's the thing about filling needs. You want to fill needs, of course, but sometimes you can't. Sometimes the draft doesn't fall that way, and it's more about getting good players. If you get good players, then, you know, what happens is you start to fill out your roster. If you try to go for need, you're getting a lesser player in most cases.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.